Is it on now? Oh, there I am. Sorry. All right. I don't know if you've seen these posts, but they're these pictures, and it's these collections of people who are having a worse day than you. Have you seen these before? They capture these moments of people's really bad day. I have some I want to show you. This first picture makes me laugh so hard. They open the door. That's actually snow. The imprint of their door. Like, I've been snowed in before, but I've never been, like, I can't get out my front door snowed in. This next one is this guy wearing two different shoes, and he didn't realize it till halfway. I wish I could say I've never done that, but I have multiple times. I actually made it, like, three-fourths of my day at work one time. I had a red shoe and a black shoe on. Like, it wasn't even that they were close. I was pregnant. I blame it completely on being pregnant. All right, this third one is funny because I don't know if you've ever played the lottery before and, like, been a number or two off. If you look at their numbers, they are literally one number less on every single number away from winning the lottery. Or how about this one? Have you ever walked into your kitchen and it's a disaster? Or the cabinets literally came off. That's a worse day than I'm having. Or this one, when you are trying to bring some paint home to get some projects done. Like, I almost feel bad because the color is so unfortunate also. Like, that's no fun. Or how about this one? It's a bad day at work. That's milk that spilled out of the entire back of it, which is no fun. Or some really bad tan lines from their leggings. Or have you been in a store before and you've misplaced your children and you can't find them? I don't know if you can see this. All the way on the top of that cabinet is the little boy. Can you see him up there? And the woman who posted this said, I heard this voice saying, daddy, help. And I went to go find where he was, and he was on top. How the heck he got up there, I have no idea. Or this one's good. I'm forgetful a lot when I pump gas, but I've never actually driven away with the gas pump attached. Or I try to play with my kids sometimes, which usually doesn't work so well, but it's not that bad. Or this last one is my favorite, because I love the faces. Like, that's not going to end well at all. Bad days are the worst. They leave us feeling, like, annoyed or defeated, and there's nothing worse than having a bad day. And do you ever realize, like, you seem to run into everybody you know on your bad days? Or, like, you try to keep the bad days kind of confined, but there's nothing worse than when it, like, spills out and other people can see it. So I want to tell you a story about a woman who is having a very bad day today. And now, I've had my share of bad days, but hers was definitely worse. She made some not-so-great life choices, and they all seemed to catch up with her at one time. And one of these choices led her to cheat on her husband, and, like happens, she got caught. But what the problem is she didn't just get caught by her husband and her family, her whole community found out about it as well. And the culture she lived in didn't just look down on you for making a very unhealthy, bad choice like this. They had very, very strict laws about it. And when she got caught having an affair, her day went from bad to incredibly worse. Because the religious leaders in her community found out what was going on, and they used her very, very bad day, these choices she'd made, against her in a very humiliating and public way. They literally dragged her before a crowd of people, and she's embarrassed and sad and disappointed, and they paraded her in front of other people to see. And her bad day literally got dragged out into a very public platform. Now, we try hard to keep our bad moments private, right? Like, my uglies are ugly, and I'd like to keep them contained to, like, my kitchen, my house, but unfortunately, these were on full display. And these religious leaders, they didn't really care about this woman. They didn't care about her heart or her pain or her frustration or her embarrassment. They only cared that they could use this uncomfortable life situation that she was in as a way to trap somebody else, as a way to mess up somebody that they didn't like. Jesus. They really didn't like Jesus. And they didn't like what he was doing, and they didn't like that people were listening to him, and they didn't like that people were following him, and they were worried about this influence Jesus was starting to have in the world, that it would, like, disrupt their place in the community, and it would disrupt their power and their authority. And so they wanted to get rid of Jesus, and they wanted to get Jesus to stop talking and doing what he was doing, and they were looking for ways constantly to work against Jesus and stop people from listening to him. And they're like, this woman, aha, we found it. We're going to use her embarrassment, her very, very bad day to corner Jesus. We're going to get him to say the wrong thing. He's going to look bad in front of people. They're going to be like, this guy's not all he's cracked up to be. But they way, way, way underestimated Jesus. Because when they dragged this poor woman, whose life uglies had caught up to her in front of Jesus, he didn't do at all what they had expected him to do. They didn't trap him, they didn't corner him, they didn't make him look bad in front of anybody else. Instead, he turned what had become incredibly embarrassing for this woman into a moment where he could show her grace. And he used this moment to teach us this incredible idea about who he is. He looked at this crowd of people who are all like, what's going to happen? And oh my gosh, thank God that's not me and that terrible person. And he looked out at this crowd who's just waiting for him to condemn this woman, who's just waiting for him to throw her under the bus. And look at what he said. He looked at all of these people and he said, let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her. Which basically meant, if one of you wants to judge her, go for it. Go right ahead and do it. But the person who should line up first to make that judgment is the person who's never messed up before. The person who should totally line up is the person who's never done something wrong. The person who's never made a mistake. The person who's never sinned. They should be the first one in line to judge her, the person who's never done anything wrong. And here's why this is so powerful. Because when somebody else messes up, especially in a way that affects us or hurts us, we think they should be held accountable, right? Like they should get in trouble for doing the wrong thing. It's only fair. Like they did something wrong. They should receive the full repercussions of it. The law should come down hard on them. They're bad. They're horrible. They're terrible. We think this, right? But the reverse is very, very different. When we mess up or when we make a mistake or when we get caught something doing we shouldn't, I want to be exception, right? Like, I don't want you to judge what I did. I want you to judge my intentions instead, right? Like, I'm not as bad as them. It was just a mistake. It just happened one time. It won't ever happen again. I didn't mean to. I'm not really so bad. I want to be given the benefit of the doubt. I want to be given a second chance. I want other people to be judged by their actions, but I want to be judged differently. And Jesus makes this powerful point because it's so true. Before we look at everybody else and judge them for their uglies, the things that have spilled over their bad days that have disrupted life, before we start judging them for their mistakes or the things they've done wrong or the choices they've made, we have to stop and consider just for a second how many times I've been them. How many times I was that same person who messed up? Before we want to like bring the full weight of the law down on everybody else, Jesus wants us to just take a moment to consider the amount of times we've come up short and not done the things that we're supposed to do. And when Jesus says this, when he makes this powerful point in this moment, the religious leaders, they don't line up. Like they don't be like, got it, yeah, like, let's get in line. Let's make this happen. Instead, something very different happens because they know they can't prove they've never done anything wrong. They know nobody would believe them if they said they've never sinned. And instead of having this moment where they got to convince people how wrong Jesus is, they all walked away one by one. They all left because Jesus didn't do what any of them expected him to do. And so that leaves Jesus and this very humiliated woman standing there all by themselves. And Jesus looked at her, and this is what he said. He said, woman, where are they? Has nobody condemned you? And she said, no one, Lord. And Jesus said to her, neither do I condemn you. Go from now on and sin no more. What Jesus is saying is, there's no punishment today. And the weight of the world just got lifted off of her chest. Because up to this point, there's no way she thinks she's walking out of this okay. Like up until this moment, there's no way she's coming out of this unscathed and unaffected and unhurt and unjudged and unpunished by what's happening. But Christ changed all of that and said, there's not going to be punishment like you think there is going to be today. Not today. Now go and do better. Go and try again. And he didn't use this moment. Jesus didn't take this moment to shame her. He didn't use this moment of embarrassment to just ladle on the guilt and the pain and the embarrassment. Instead, Jesus showed her compassion. Instead, in this very bad day of hers, he gave her a second chance. He essentially gave her a do-over, another chance to go do life again. Now, the religious leaders who dragged her before this crowd and made a spectacle of her, they didn't care about her. They didn't care about her personhood or her life or her heart. They didn't care anything for her pain. She was a means to an end for them. But not so with Christ. Instead, Jesus did care for her life. He did care for her heart. And in this incredibly tense and painful moment, he showed her grace. Right in the very middle of her ugly, bad day, he showed her kindness and he released her from the guilt and the shame that she'd been carrying with her. Here's why this is important. For many of us, we see God and we see the church kind of like these religious leaders, right? Like the place to be avoided when we've done something wrong, or the people who are only going to make us feel worse than we already do, or we start avoiding church and we avoid God and we avoid religion because we're like, I don't need any more shame. Check, right? Like, I don't need any more guilt. Got it. Like, I don't need anybody to tell me how much quicker I'm going to hell. Check. But that's not how it works with Jesus Christ. When we meet him, when we meet Jesus, just like this woman did, it's not shame that he leaves us with, but a changed life. And all throughout history, you can read encounter after encounter after encounter that Jesus Christ had with men and women just like you and I, and they walked away changed. Because people who met Jesus were changed by that encounter. He didn't come into the world to make us more religious. He came to show us more grace. He didn't come to add more burden and take away our freedom. In fact, just the opposite. He came to set us free. He came into the world to take our burdens and show us grace, that in him we get to know life and grace and hope. And he came to give people just like you and I a second chance. That when we've had our very worst days, in him, we get a do-over, a new start, a chance to go and try again and do life a little bit different. To take the mistakes, to take the pain, and he wipes our slate clean. And we get another chance at doing better with him. This is who Christ is. He's the one who shows up and takes our pain and our guilt and our hurt, all that junk we've been carrying around with us that's heavy our whole life. And he says, why don't you give it to me? Why don't you let me carry that really, really heavy load for you? And instead of being overwhelmed by the heaviness of life, by the pain of mistakes and bad decisions, we get to start again, not burdened, but free. When we meet Christ, we don't walk away more religious, we walk away more loved. We don't become more rigid, we become more gracious. And there's always gonna be negative things, you've heard it, said about religion, right? It's narrow-minded or legalistic, it's judgmental, it's exhausting, it's confusing, they're all hypocrites. But you can't say those things about Jesus. You can say it about religion, but you can't say it about Jesus because it is not who he is. There is a difference between what is religious and who Jesus is. Because where religion has left us feeling confused and exhausted, Jesus Christ has shown us rest for our souls. Where religion has just overwhelmed us with obligations and duties and rules, Christ has set us free with grace and freedom in him. Where religion instills fear, like we're never gonna get it right, like we're just gonna mess up again and again, Christ gives us the strength and the courage to try one more time. Where religion is this struggle for authority and power and who's in control, Christ modeled for us what a life of humility and service could look like. Where religion turns its back on people, Jesus Christ looks at us and says, you are mine. Where religion leaves us feeling shamed, Christ brings us hope. Where religion has left us feeling hurt or abandoned, Christ leads us to healing. Because it's Christ who loves us and him who calls us his own. And friends, that same grace and compassion that he showed a woman thousands of years ago, he extends to us. In the middle of our very, very worst, bad, horrible days, our bad decisions, our pain, he finds us right where we are, and he reaches out his hand to us to show us a way out. He doesn't turn his back on us when we do the wrong thing. He doesn't abandon us and leave us all out on our own to figure it out. He dives right into our life, right into our bad, horrible days, and he shows us a way out in him. Because one thing we know about Christ is when we were at our worst is when he found us and gave his life for us. He didn't wait for us to get perfect. He didn't wait for us to like figure it all out and line all of our ducks in a row and start making better choices. He didn't wait for us to like clean up our image and look like a better person. Right in the middle of our junk and our mess and our ugly days, Christ gave his life for us that we could know what it means to be found with grace and hope. Because that's who Christ is. He pushes past the junk. He pushes past the pain. He pushes past the mistakes, and he includes us, and he loves us, and he lifts us up to this full potential that we have in him. Here's the Jesus that we know. The Jesus we know is filled with love, acceptance, hope, freedom, and courage. And every time you look at the encounters he had with other people, you find someone who offered courage to his closest friends. You find a man who showed kindness to those who were in need of a second chance. You see somebody who offered friendship to the lonely or healed the sick and showed mercy to the broken. You see a Jesus who gave affection to the lost and compassion to the disconnected. You see someone who showed love to the hurting and offered a place to those who'd been left out and rejected. Christ gave his very life so that we might know the extent, the love that God has for humanity. If you're ever just wondering, like, how could God love people? Like, how could God look at the mess and love anybody? The place you look is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is our proof that God loves us more than we could ever imagine. And I wonder if you know this Jesus. I wonder if this is the Jesus you've met in your life. Or maybe the Jesus you've been thinking about is more like the religious leaders, and I just want to show you who he is today, because the Christ that we know is the one who loves us and wants to show us grace and forgiveness. He's the one who came in the world, who gave his life, that we might have hope in him. If that's not the Jesus you know, I wonder if you might just open your heart and give him another chance today. If the Jesus you know isn't the one that points you to light and hope and courage and faith and grace and compassion, I wonder if you might replace what you thought you knew about him with what is true, that he loves us enough to invite us into a life with him. Or maybe you have met Christ before. Maybe you gave your heart to him a long, long time ago. And I want to push us a little bit further, because it's not enough just to say that one time that I gave Jesus my heart and I met him. I want to push us to grow a little bit more with him. Let me give you some ideas on how you know where you need to grow. You can tell a tree by what its fruit is, right? So you know an apple tree is an apple tree because it grows apples. You don't go to an apple tree and pick off a pear. You don't go to an apple tree expecting oranges. It's pretty straightforward. An apple tree grows apples. Or if you go to a rose bush, you expect roses, not peonies. It's very clear what the tree or the bush is based on the fruit that it produces. And the same is true for us. The fruit that we produce in our life is evidence of who Christ is to us. And we get to say, what are the fruit I'm producing in my relationship to Jesus Christ? Let me give you some ideas to talk about. The more time I spend with Jesus, the more I should be growing in love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. These are literally called the fruits of the Spirit because when God is at work in me, I should be growing in this way. The more I spend time with Christ, the more I should love other people. The more I should be experiencing joy in my life and peace in every one of those words. Timothy Keller explains these. If you want a little bit more than just a word, let me give you a good definition. Timothy Keller explains them like this. Love means to serve a person for their good and intrinsic value, not for what the person brings to you. There's a way to love because it gets something out of it for us, and there's a way to love that is just serving the people that we love. This is the kind of love that Christ calls us to. Where he says, joy is a delight in God for the sheer beauty and worth of who he is. Joy is greater than happiness. Because my emotions go up and go down, and I'm happy one day and grouchy the next. But joy runs deeper and more solid because just realizing who God is, how wonderful he is, leads us to deeper levels of joy. He said, peace is the confidence and rest in the wisdom and control of God rather than your own. Peace is, I can't control everything, but God can. Peace isn't what's out of my control, I'm a frazzled, stressed mess. Peace is what's out of my control, I'm so deeply confident in who God is that he's got it. Even when I can't say I do, God does. Says kindness is the ability to serve others practically in a way which makes me vulnerable, which comes from having a deep inner security. He likens goodness with integrity. Being good is being a person of integrity, being the same person in every situation rather than a phony or a hypocrite. Faithfulness, he connects to loyalty and courage. Says you got to be the kind of person who is utterly reliable and true to your word. Gentleness, he connects with humility. And humility isn't thinking less of who I am, it's just thinking less about myself. Humility is finding ways to think about other people more than I think about me. And then self-control, he calls the ability to pursue the important over the urgent, rather than to always be impulsive or uncontrolled. Let's be honest for a second. It's a big list. And it is impossible to do all of those things on that list by my own. Like, if we're really being honest, like, I might be good at a few, or, like, had a really good week, and, like, maybe I was, like, solid on four of them. But doing every one of those things consistently, week after week after week, that is impossible to do on our own. I know you thought it, so I'm going to say it for you. You're saying, no way, right? Like, I might be kind, but what happens is, it seems impossible together, which is why we need Jesus Christ. Because the closer I am to Christ, the more he's working these values into my heart. The more time I spend learning about Christ and connecting to him and learning about how he treated people and who he was and what he's called us to do, the more I want to. It starts with me even wanting to be good. It starts with me even wanting to be forgiving. It starts with me even wanting to be compassionate. And I want to the more time I spend with Jesus Christ. I need the work of Christ in me if I ever have a hope at living a life of self-control. I need the work of the Spirit chipping away at my heart if humility is ever going to be a part of who I am. So here's what I want to challenge us with. What if you wrote down this list of words? What if you just took this list of words home with you this week and you started thinking about them? You started honestly saying, how am I doing in these places? This isn't for anybody else to judge you or anybody else to look. This is just a private time with you in a quiet space somewhere. Give yourself an honest evaluation. How are you doing on these ideas? And then what if you just picked one to practice this week? What if you just picked one word from this list and every single day said, I'm going to find a way to show kindness today. I'm going to find a way to be loving today. I'm going to find a way to serve. I'm going to find a way to be faithful. What if we just picked one and started practicing it this week? And then we practiced another one next week. And we started praying about it. God, I don't want to be forgiving, but I know you want me to. Could you please help me? God, I'm struggling in the kindness category with these people that I work with. But would you please help me to be kind because it's who you've called me to be? God, I really want to get better at patience, and I am not doing good at it. Would you help me, please? And what if we just took these words and started layering them into our thinking and our time that we spend praying with God? About 80 years ago, Harvard started a study to learn what leads to healthy and happy lives. It's the longest ongoing research study on happiness that's ever been done. For 80 years, they've been checking in. They started with 268 Harvard sophomores at the time, and they checked in with them as they grew and how their lives changed over the years. Now, they started expanding the research from 1948, and in the 70s, they started including 456 Boston inner city residents. They eventually included the children of these original men who had started it, and then about a decade ago, they started researching the wives who were part of it as well. It's interesting because 19 of that original 268 people are still alive. And then of that 456 Boston group, 40 of them are still alive. When they collected all of this data and all of this research and all of this information and they started looking it all together, here's what they found. They said, love is really all that matters. George Valiant was a director of the study for a while, and he said there's two pillars of happiness. One is love, and the other is finding a way of coping with life that doesn't push love away. He said joy is connection. The more areas in your life you can make connection, the better. And listen to what this article said. It said, it may seem obvious, but that doesn't make it any less true. Love is a key to a happy and fulfilling life. In life, we are going to face bad days. We are going to have hard moments and struggles. But our promise in Jesus Christ is we do not face the hard days alone. That we have somebody who loves us and is on our side and going to see us through every single one of those hard days. The very greatest connection that we can make in this life is a connection to Jesus Christ. Because in him, we will find the greatest love and the greatest joy, the greatest happiness and the greatest peace. The very best life that we can live is lived in a relationship with Jesus Christ. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would be at work in our hearts today. I pray that you would help us to look at who you are in Jesus Christ one more time. I pray, Father, where we've gotten it wrong, where we've had wrong ideas of who you are, or we've let religious experience overwhelm our connection with you, I pray that you would give us the courage to try again. I pray that the love of Jesus Christ would overwhelm every amount of doubt or pain or struggle that we've had. I pray, Father, where we've been hurt, where we've been disappointed or let down, that the love of Jesus Christ would lift us up one more time. I pray, Father, where we have faced struggles and bad decisions and made bad choices, that you would find one more way to forgive us, that we would be reminded of how loving and gracious and kind that you are. I pray, Father, that we would open up our hearts to you today, that you would do an incredible and powerful work in us. I pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.